magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Mike, come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what is up? Welcome to the Touch Arcade Show, episode number 426. Season 2 episode, I don't remember anymore. This is the Touch Arcade Show.
420, remember.
Episode 420.6, I guess. this is the Touch Arcade Show, where we round up all the best things going on in the world of mobile gaming. And I accidentally clicked on an app on my computer that I never open, and everything has grinded to a halt.
what app did you open?
OpenMU.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is actually a really good Mac emulator app that plays a lot of old games and stuff like that, but I never play it. So anyway, welcome to the show. Let's get right into some off-topic discussion. What's going on in your life?
I would say the main thing of this week. Well, so I have been loving, like, we're just in the peak, or what feels like the starting of the peak of just dumb Democratic primary bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Where Twitter is just like
insufferable
on a level that's like hard to even wrap your brain around.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just been really, really enjoying like all the trolling potential of like yeah. all these different people that are just like looking for something to like make fun of to make their guy look better. And like no one's stopping to look like whether or not the thing they're pointing out to make fun of is like a parody or real or anything along those lines.
Yeah.
So I've been really amused this week by like actual real journalists that are like linking to legitimate parodies from comedy accounts as like real things. When like, if you just would have looked like, so for instance, like today was the, like so they did a Mayor Pete dance a few weeks ago. Like I'm sure you saw that.
Yeah.
So a guy that's like actual like Twitter comedian posted like a Bloomberg dance, which was just making fun of the Mayor Pete dance. It was just like the worst, stupidest dance imaginable, and like all these journalists picked up on it when it was like, dude, if you would have looked like three tweets down on this guy's thing, he would be like thanking everyone for coming out to his show at the Upright Citizens Brigade and like all this other stuff. So I don't know, that's been what's been amusing.
I've been pondering if you know, the everyone talks about like what a hellscape we live in and all this stuff and everything's so bad now and blah blah blah. And, like, I wonder if it's just everything's the same, but we just have this hyper-connected instant gratification sort of, like, lifestyle now with all our connected social medias and all of that crap, where that is what has made our lives worse.
I do, for real.
Because, like, it's kind of scary to think about, too, that, you know, if you were the people that invented Twitter and then to look at what it's become now and, like, look at some of the stuff that happens on it. And, you know, it's you arguably made the world a worse place, while in many other ways making it a better place. But like same thing with like Facebook and stuff like that. But even same thing, go all the way back to something like the iPhone. And it's like, hey, here's a little thing that everyone can like, everyone owns a smartphone of some type now that can download apps and do all these amazing things that you would have never even known about or had access to previously. And it just kind of opens up this whole new world. I don't know if it's for the better or not, or maybe our world as it was just isn't equipped to deal with all of this stuff. Just even basic stuff like, you know, Twitter allowing all the crappy stuff to go on that goes on for whatever reasons they have. So I don't know. I just wonder if like in 50 years we'll look back and be like, can you believe the crazy Wild West of like the internet opening up during the 2000s?
Yeah, maybe.
I can't believe things used to be the way they were or whatever.
The other really fun thing that happened this week was, so CNN's Jake Tapper has this like Elf on a Shelf thing that they're like incorporating into like their show somehow, I guess. And he made a Twitter account for it called Tappy the Lead Elf, because the show is called The Lead or something like that.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine made an account called Tappy the Load, or no, sorry, Fappy the Load Elf.
Oh God.
And we're just like constantly tweeting at Tappy about like just jacking off and like all sorts of other stuff like that. To the point that Jake Tapper deleted the account.
No way, really? Yeah. Wow.
So it's been a good week on Twitter.
Yeah, I guess so.
Shitty week overall, but good week on Twitter if you're into really dumb shit happening.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my story.
I don't know if I don't even think I have anything going on since last week. Lead a pretty dull life over here. It's raining out, can't go scootering. Although I did upgrade my scooter.
Upgrades. Actually,
which is fun. So the model, so the Angry Bird scooter I got a month or so ago, that I mutilated on purpose, trying to get rid of the microphone attachment, and then had to pay to get it fixed. comes with the option you can buy like an external battery and attach it to it, which will double your range, but also give you better acceleration and a better top speed. And so a guy on eBay was selling refurbished ones for super cheap, and I was like, everyone I've seen that has bought one has been like, it's a game changer. It should just come standard with this scooter because it makes it so much better.
How does it attach, or like, how does it work? Or
it attaches to the stem. So this particular scooter, the battery is in the stem. A lot of the other ones have the battery in like the board that you stand on, but this one's actually a tube inside the stem where the handlebars are and stuff like that. And so there's like a little attachment point on the stem, basically where you attach the extra battery right onto the stem with this bracket kit that it comes with and stuff like that. And it plugs into the other battery. And then more or less it gets treated like one giant battery. Huh. The app and stuff splits it out so that you can see, like, you know, if one has a bigger charge than the other or whatever. But the way the scooter uses it is like one big battery. So they actually...
Does it go faster now with two batteries?
Yeah, a lot faster. Well, I mean, so top speed was 16 and now it's like 19, which doesn't sound like a huge jump, but like 19 on one of those things is pretty fast. Like 16 was fast enough for me. My biggest gripe was that the acceleration was dog shit. So like when you'd stop at an intersection or something like that, and then you'd go to go again, it was like you're driving through mud. And you just felt like an idiot because anyone else that was around, you're taking like 30 seconds to cross like an intersection.
Yeah.
Going like a mile an hour.
Well, I mean, you kick off like a skateboard before you hit the throttle, right? You're not like...
You do. And even with that, it takes a minute to get the acceleration going. And so if I was like in a situation where it was like a two-way stop and there was cross traffic that didn't stop and there was a car coming but I had time to cross, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing it because I wouldn't feel like I'd accelerate across the intersection fast enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so this extra battery now has completely changed that. The acceleration is like, I probably guess like three times as good as it was before.
That's surprising.
Where I feel way more comfortable taking off from a stop and making it through an intersection and stuff like that. And also it's just more fun to get up to top speed much, much quicker. Because before it'd be like, you'd have to have a pretty decent straightaway to kind of get up to 16 miles an hour.
How much did you say how much that cost?
The battery was $50 refurbished. So, if you buy them brand new, it's ridiculous. They're like $230 because a Segway can charge that. And then even if you bought it brand new on Amazon, it's like $180, which just seems like too much to spend on something like that. So we'll see how this refurbished one holds up. I don't know. It seems fine so far, but maybe long term it'll have issues.
I mean, worst case, the battery explodes and burns your house down. I mean,
yeah, and the way it attaches, it's exactly at like, you know, genital height. So if it does explode, it's gonna be a huge issue. But
I love it.
In terms of fun, gosh, it's so much more fun to ride that scooter now. I love that stupid thing. I can't believe how silly I thought those were for the longest time, and then just a chance.
Dude, I know.
Rental.
Like after we walked around where your place is now, I like was dumbfounded that you didn't have one of those.
Yeah, and it's probably like similar to how you were with your boosted board or whatever. Like, it's just fun. It goes fast enough to be really fun and make going places on flat really fun. Yeah. I think if I lived in any hillier or any traffickier place, I probably wouldn't like to do it. And I see, like, I follow the scooter scene on, like, Reddit and stuff now, too, where people get crazy and spend thousands
on,
like, craziest scooters ever. It's wild. They go, like, 40 or 50 miles an hour and stuff like that and have dual suspension and all this stuff. And it's really cool, though, because, like, a lot of people, it's like, you know, I live 3 miles from where I work, and it just seemed really stupid to get in my car every day, sit in traffic, take 30 minutes to drive 3 miles, and then find somewhere to park and all that, blah, 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 to where I can just hop on my scooter. It folds up when I get there. It sits under my desk. Nobody complains. It just seems like such a better option. And I can definitely see, and it's already happened in other countries where scooters have become like the de facto sort of like transportation, for like short distances and stuff like that. I can definitely see that taking hold here a little bit more, even though I think the auto industry, I feel like our whole country is not built around that at all. Like, it struggles even in my city, which is pretty bike friendly, but still is not great. I feel like everything has been designed way back in the 50s when they were designing highways and stuff like that to be like, everyone owns a car and you go everywhere in a car because car. Reality, it just makes a lot more sense when you live in a centralized city to have something smaller and easier to putt around on. So
I've read some different editorials on like why that is, and I guess like the auto industry and the oil industry basically just like railroaded anything to do with like public transit and everything else because like cars are cheaper and easier, and like this is a waste of money, blah 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 blah. Yeah. Which like, I mean, maybe that was true in, you know, the 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever. But that is definitely not the case now. Like, to be fair though, I don't think anyone ever could have foreseen like the kind of urban density that exists now in the world, you know? So
that's true. And there's other countries too have a lot of weird issues, with stuff like this too. And, one story, I just read about was in Scotland, where they have a requirement that any motorized vehicle needs to be registered so you can pay tax on it and blah, blah, blah. But like a motorized scooter with a little electric motor doesn't like qualify quite as like a vehicle. They have no like system in place for registering them or anything like that. You don't need to have a license to drive it or anything like that either. And so it's like this weird sort of gray area, but I guess, so like cops could pull you over and get you in trouble for it. But like for the most part, they've looked the other way, because they're not crazy fast. They're not obnoxious. Yeah. People generally, you know, obey the same laws you would on a bike when you're riding these scooters. So, but apparently this one guy got pulled over, got his scooter confiscated and got a ticket and fought it in court. And then the judge ruled that, he broke the law. It was a motorized vehicle. He didn't have it registered. And so now that's kind of set the precedent to where they don't know what's going to happen with the whole electric scooter market, and anybody that owns them is kind of scared to ride them now because they are technically in the wrong, but it's the government also has no way of allowing them to do it the right way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It always sucks when like legislation and regulations move so much slower than like technology. I mean, like we kind of saw that here in Illinois, like when electric cars started to become a thing. I don't know how, I would assume most states are similar, but like we get most of the money for fixing our roads from gas tax. Like our gas tax is pretty high.
Yeah.
And so when electric cars started to become a thing, like you just, you know, registered your car, bought the license plate, you know, it cost like $100 or something like that a year. And that was it. And then like people were starting to realize like, whoa, holy shit. Like this is an insane savings because like instead of paying, you know, like a few cents a mile, basically in a usage tax that you get through, that you pay through gas, it's just free now to use the roads with like these super heavy cars that and everything else. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how all this stuff kind of shakes out. Cause I mean, it's a big shift with like, not only like how, you know, transport and cities are, but like also outside of that, like if electric cars catch on in a big way and stuff. So,
well, I think, a lot of cities, mine included, was, caught off guard with like the popularity of the rental bike and scooter market. Because those companies really did kind of railroad their way in, And, you know, you wake up one day and all of a sudden there's 50 billion rental bikes on every corner. And it's kind of just like, I don't think anyone was prepared for that to happen. But they've been so popular with people that use them, and they're so handy for so many reasons.
Yeah.
It's kind of forced them to do something about it. And my city just had they just started enforcing at the beginning of this month, I think, the rules for those or whatever. And it's kind of stupid because due to some sort of like archaic law back in the day, it is technically legal to ride your bike on the sidewalk, which I always thought it was not. And we have
interesting.
Pretty ample bike lanes. Like, some roads are better than others, and you kind of know which roads to take if you're on a bike that's going to be like easier and safer or whatever. But like, I always would get mad at people riding their bikes on the sidewalk, because I'm like, get out, this is for walking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, get out of here.
And so apparently, though, it is actually legal to ride your bike on the sidewalk, and that also includes the electrified bikes like jump bikes and stuff. However, it is illegal to ride your scooter on the sidewalk. And so electric scooters like mine and all the rental ones, you have to be in the bike lane. You have to ride it in the road and be treated pretty much like a motorized vehicle. And so I thought that was kind of stupid, because I'm like, if any of those are safer to ride on the sidewalk, the scooters probably are, because
they're way more maneuverable.
They're smaller and lighter. They don't go as fast as an e-bike does. It's easier to avoid stuff or hop off it if you needed to for any reason or like whatever. Whereas like a bike is just like something ready to barge into you if you walk out in front of it on accident or something like that. So that's kind of annoying. And now it makes me paranoid, because there's definitely spots where I'd be riding on it where I'm like, I'm going to get up on this sidewalk for a minute during this little stretch or whatever. Because I do for the most part ride in the road, but now I'm like scared I'm going to get a ticket, because they're all like hot on enforcing that law to make sure people know the rules.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So whatever.
Huh.
Anyway, that was a huge tangent. More scooter talk on this week's episode of the Mobile Gaming Podcast Touchergate Show.
I mean, it's an Angry Bird scooter, so it's all relevant.
You know, I will accept that. It is an Angry Bird scooter.
Speaking of, well, I don't know if this is podcast appropriate, but I went to the Midwest Fur Fest last weekend.
Okay, how was that?
It was actually really, it was surprisingly fun. Like, everyone there was like ultra nice.
Really?
Yeah, and they had like an art auction there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like a everyone could go in section and an adults only section. They checked your ID, and there was some porn drawings of the Mighty Eagle.
No way.
That, like, dude, I was laughing like such a fucking idiot. Like, once I saw it was like the Mighty Eagle like bent over, just like spreading its butthole.
Oh my god. Like goatee
Mighty Eagle. It was like the best thing I've seen in my life.
Wow, that's did you buy it?
It already got bid up to like $50, and I was like,
damn. Okay.
I spend money on dumb shit, but I feel like bidding like $100 on a Mighty Eagle porn drawing is would be up there for the dumbest thing.
I feel like you can make an argument that it's a work expense or something, but you know, hang it up at the game club offices.
It was cool. It was a fun time though. It was everyone there was really cool.
I can see that. I 100% do not understand the furry like culture, but I also have heard that they're just super welcoming and nice.
Oh yeah.
And like, you know what I mean? As long as they're not being like, you know, harassed by people or whatever.
Yeah, we actually went because it's always in the news in the Chicago area, because it's the biggest. I don't know if it's the biggest one in the world or the biggest one just in the United States or North America or whatever, but either way, it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like find out about it by like reading the news like the next week, and it'd be like all these crazy photos and everything else. I'm like, oh goddamn, like I would love to go check that out.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked Lindsay into like going up there on Saturday night, like just to basically walk through and see what there's to see. And then we got dinner afterwards, because like there's a big like dinner complex of a shitload of restaurants right next to the convention center. And like the place we went for dinner was just like full of furries, like in costume.
Wow.
And everyone there was being super cool. And like the restaurant staff was like losing their shit over it, because it was just like so strange. And it was crazy just like watching kids at the restaurant though, because like they have no idea what's happening. Like, just imagine, like to them, it's like,
it's like at a theme park.
Yeah.
Something.
It's like, man, like 50, like baseball mascots just like walked into this restaurant and sat down at a table.
Oh God, that is a sitcom episode premise really, if I ever heard one.
It was it's just like very strange to see. and they can drink through the masks too, which was surprising. Like this dude was standing on the table drinking a boot of beer through his furry mask.
How?
I don't know.
I don't compute with that at all, but
I don't know.
That's very cool. Well, I'm glad you had a good time at that.
Yeah, it was something.
So speaking of mobile gaming, moving on to another mobile gaming related topic. This was in the not surprising, but surprising column this week. The Elder Scrolls Legends, which is Bethesda's card battler kind of Hearthstone-ish type game, is basically being put on hiatus, and they're not going to be creating any new content for it. It's not going to remain in active development at this point, although they do say that the existing game as it is will continue to work on all the platforms that it's on and stuff like that.
Not surprising.
I don't know. Not surprising, because we've wondered in the past too, and we've worked with them to do like exclusive card reveals and stuff like that. And I would say for the most part, they've been pretty popular. And I think the audience that does like this game really ate up that type of stuff, seeing new cards reveal and things like that, and showed their support for it. But I think in general, this game just never reached the type of popularity that they were hoping it would. It definitely didn't reach Hearthstone's peak or anything like that. And probably just isn't making much money for them to continue
developing. My take on this game always was like, I just like never really knew how many people were out there. And there certainly was a demographic that was like, I like Hearthstone, but it's just like too simple for me.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure there's people out there that, I mean, obviously they're playing this game, right? But I just like, usually in mobile particularly, it's like, oh, this game is good, but it should be more complicated. It means fewer people are going to play it, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, but like, it served the audience of people that were like, oh, I like Hearthstone, but I wish it was more like Magic the Gathering or had like more depth to deck building or other things like that. And then that Magic Arena or whatever the new Magic game is called came out.
Yeah, it was
like, okay, well now I don't know who this serves at all.
Yeah.
Because like people that want kind of like a more like mid-core casual card game are going to play Hearthstone.
Yeah.
People that want like a like the actual like Magic experience are going to play the new Magic game.
Yeah.
And that just kind of like, I don't know, unfortunately like leaves us out in the open.
Yeah. And kind of the same thing happened with Artifact, although Artifact never actually officially launched, but that was Valve's crazy card game that they were working on. Mm-hmm. And you remember when we saw it at PAX and we were given the demo of it or whatever, they had one of the biggest booth areas out of anybody. They had a massive like live stream going on with full on announcers and things like that, trying to make this thing be a thing. And that game was so ridiculously complicated that I've looking back on it now, like, you know, having a person sit there and guide you through the demo and telling you what to do made it seem like, oh man, there's so many neat things going on in this game. Like I can see where you're trying to go with this, and I think there's a lot of cool things and cool potential for it or whatever. But like looking back on that now, I'm just like, how did somebody not stop at one point and be like,
I know.
There is so much going on here. It's so ridiculously complicated that you expect people to basically have to get a PhD to learn how to play this game. It's not going to happen. It's a non-starter. Nobody did that.
When I went to that Valve event where they revealed the game, like I had one of the producer of the game or one of those other people sitting next to me for like a full 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And if they would have left me at the end and be like, okay, you know, go ahead and play one, I'd be like, I don't know the first thing to do. Like this is so complicated.
Yeah.
And that's coming from someone that played freaking Magic the Gathering for like decades of my life.
Right.
It was crazy. It was like people were like, hey, you know, what's a really underserved market segment is people that play Magic the Gathering and are like, you know, this game is just too easy and too simple.
It should be like triple the complexity.
Yeah, no, for real. So I don't know. But what bums me out is that like the thing that I think would have been really cool about Artifact is the whole, you own your cards thing and you can sell the cards on the Steam marketplace and trade with other people, because like, all these free-to-play card games, like, your cards are trapped on your account.
Right.
You can't, like... And that's, like, such a huge dynamic of playing Magic is, like, the tradability and like the third party economy that kind of like forms around cards and stuff. But
yeah,
I don't know. Like, I think what would be cool with Elder Scrolls Legends is if they just like made all the all the cards just included. Mm-hmm. And then like just turned it into like, all right, it's just $10 game now. And if you want to play it, like these are all the cards, like make whatever decks you want.
Right.
You know, you can play online if people are still playing, but you know, just have fun with it.
Right.
Cause there's a lot of like cool content. I mean, like every time they did like little demos for us on like the expansions and stuff, we always had like really neat like game mechanics and stuff like that. But it was just like, I was so into Hearthstone at the time that maintaining two card collections was just like too much.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So. Yeah, it's kind of a shame. Hopefully this thing keeps working at least for a while, and maybe someday they'll come around with a better kind of plan for it and keep things going again or whatever. Or maybe they just axe the whole thing, pull it off the store,
shut it all down. I feel like there's just so much like R&D that went into this that it would seem crazy to me to think that they would just like kill it entirely.
Yeah, and such a rich sort of world to pull from for something like this,
too. That was the other cool thing about it, was that like my Elder Scrolls, you know, experience is basically based on like playing Skyrim and Morrowind and stuff like that. So I don't know like a lot of the Elder Scrolls like lore and races and all the nitty-gritty stuff, but like this game is pretty cool, and that like really presented a lot of that in like a pretty neat way.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know. RIP.
Just kind of a bummer.
RIP in peace.
RIP Elder Scrolls. This was a nice announcement this week. The Forsaken Media Brothers, which is a development team that's four brothers making games for the past, I don't know, decade or so.
Yeah, forever.
Have announced War Tortoise 2, and I know that you really enjoyed
the
first.
I love the original War Tortoise. Yeah.
It was a really cool idea. So, like, their whole shtick has been that they make games where they try to blend different genres together into one. And for the most part, they're really successful with doing that. When they announced War Tortoise, which I forget exactly when it came out, I think it was like 2016, they announced it as like a sort of like a third person shooter mixed with an idle clicker. And that immediately was like, what the hell? Like, how do you, what does that even mean or whatever? And then the game came out and it made so much sense and it was so smart, that it is like a third person shooter, wave based. You were in a fixed position and you basically, blast as many enemies as you can, wave after wave, and get as far as you could or whatever. But the genius was that they really implemented kind of like an idle clicker games progression system. And so you would be able to upgrade your stuff, max everything out, and then you'd actually get to prestige and do it all over again, but with like a, you know, a head start or whatever.
There was like two tiers of upgrades, which I thought was really cool. Cause like very often in like, say for instance, like Modern Warfare, like, you know, you prestige just cause like I hit max level and there's nothing to do and I'm going to be playing multiplayer anyway. So I guess I'll start over. Whereas this game had, I don't remember exactly how it was laid out, but it was like, so you upgrade your guns and your weapons and stuff like that, just as part of playing and getting whatever currency you generate by like killing enemies or whatever. And then you would get like, I don't remember, like prestige points or something like that, where you could buy these like overarching, like always on passive upgrades. And it's been so long since I played, I can't give a good example of what it would do, but like that would make your next playthrough like either go faster or you make more money or like one gun is stronger or like something along those lines. So like, it just had this like really, really, really cool feeling of progression, not only like prestige to prestige, but also from like an overall sense that was really well done.
Yeah. Yeah. It was such a cool game. It was definitely one of their fan favorites, I think. And it did really well. They said it did more than 4 million downloads, which is pretty darn good for four dudes making games. And so they've announced a sequel to it coming early next year. And it's going to go into beta soon, too. So there's a link in our story to the forum thread where you can go in there and be like, hey, I want to play the beta when it's out, which I think could either be today or possibly next week. So you can throw them your email if you want to get in on the beta or whatever. But, the kind of cool thing about this, the big sort of change over the first game is that it's not only a fixed position game. You can actually move to different points around the map. And then as you're moving from one point to the other, you can continue battling with the waves of enemies and stuff like that. Although you're a giant tortoise, so you're not like going fast or anything like that. But it's kind of interesting because the different points on the map that you're able to move to, each one will have special like attributes to it, and you can actually claim them and connect them to other points that you claim to kind of like claim the map. So there's this sort of like territory control aspect to it now, which sounds really cool.
Have they said if it's going to be premium or free to play?
I'm almost positive it's going to be free to play, but I don't think they've said one way or the other. Yeah. The first game was free to play, but it just worked because of the progression system or whatever. So I don't see them changing it this time around either, but we'll see. War Tortoise was awesome. So
yeah, I really like, I mean, the first one was great, and I feel like with a little bit more complexity, like it could be like a real Steam game or whatever.
Yeah, no, so, totally. I could see more than just the mobile world like in a game like this. So
that's cool, though.
So this was interesting news. Minecraft got updated to be cross-play compatible with the PlayStation 4. My, how those walls have crumbled over the last, like, year or so. And you got to wonder if it really had to do with Fortnite pressuring them back in the day. I would
say, how could it not? I mean,
it had to have something to do with it, right? Because there's like a lot of more cross-platform openness with PlayStation now than there was before. And Minecraft, arguably still one of the biggest games in the world 10 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, God, that's like, remember when Microsoft bought Minecraft from Notch for like $1 billion or whatever? And everyone was like, are you guys out of your mind?
They made their money back.
I mean, like, they have to, like, many times over by now. It's insane, like, how Minecraft's popularity is just like solid.
Nico Partners analyst Daniel Ahmad on Twitter, that we're always citing for stories and stuff like that, who's just a really good resource, mostly into the Asian world of mobile gaming, but also elsewhere, posted something that was like the year's most like watched games on Twitch or YouTube or whatever it was, or something like that. Like, Minecraft was like up in there. I don't remember if it was the top or not, but I mean, it was still one of the most watched games out of all the games.
It's driven by kids who have absolutely nothing to do. Like, my a friend of mine I think his son is like 8 or 9, maybe. I don't know. I'm bad with how old kids are, but like, if this kid's not playing Minecraft, he's watching Minecraft videos on YouTube or people playing on Twitch.
Yeah,
that's just what he does. Like, he doesn't watch cartoons, doesn't watch, you know, like any other normal like kid stuff. It's like Minecraft YouTubers.
Yeah,
which is bonkers to me, but. Hey, whatever.
That's crazy.
Whatever it does it for you.
But yeah, it's cool. And I mean, Minecraft's on every platform now or whatever. So you can basically play it with people no matter what they own.
Yeah. No, I think that's cool. Play I like anywhere. That. It's like the future of games, in my opinion.
Totally. Yeah. So a while back, Bethesda re-released.
Oh, I'm on the wrong page that you are. Because remember the snafu with the tabs?
Backing up. So Slay the Spire is one of the most popular games on Steam, and one of the most wanted on mobile games around. Yeah. Like, everybody has been wanting this game on mobile for the last year or two.
This game is so fucking good on the Switch, it's stupid.
That's what I hear. And this is also probably the most, I don't want to say cloned, but kind of cloned game on mobile, because there's like at least half a dozen very Slay the Spire-esque games on mobile that are very good in their own right. They scratch the same sort of itch, but they're not Slay the Spire, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, the Megacrit Games, who actually makes the actual Slay the Spire, has been talking about doing a mobile port for at least a year now. And all signs and all of their responses have pointed to it was going to release before the end of the year. Up to even a couple of weeks ago, they were still saying that. And then they posted an update on Steam that was basically like, okay, it's not actually coming this year. We have to delay it. It's not quite ready. We don't have an actual, you know, new release date or anything like that, but they're guessing it won't be too long and it should hopefully be early next year. I saw a lot of people bummed out about that because they were like, I wanted to play this over the holidays so bad.
The amount of games that come up that are just like total knockoffs when you search for Slay the Spire is insane.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, the first time I searched for it, I don't see it now, but like I was like, because I remember we talked about it and I was flying somewhere or whatever. And I was like, oh, man, I literally have Slay the Spire on my phone to play on the plane. Like, it has to be out now. And I searched for it, and like one of the first things came up was like this knockoff called like Spire Slayer or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a thing. It's mobile, so it's not like a surprise that happens. But it also, it kind of sucks for the original devs, because it's like, okay, the the demand is there.
Yeah.
And if you had really put the pedal to the metal and got this thing out a year ago, you'd be soaking up all these people that have been playing the knockoffs for the past year. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Hopefully it won't be too much longer until the actual proper official Slay the Spire comes out on mobile. I think it's going to be like the killer platform to play it on.
The problem is so the first thing that comes up when you search for Slay the Spire is this game called Dungeon Tales RPG card game that looks like almost identical. Like when you look at like the features and stuff, like it's the same game, and like the art looks way better than Slay the Spire, which is just kind of like, you know, the 2D art. Right. Oh, that's
A lot of the clones that come out, you know, are the people on the Tetragrade forums are real good at finding them and talking about them and stuff like that. And most of them have a lot better art. And a lot of them have a lot of cool ideas that aren't in Slay the Spire that would benefit that game. You know what I mean? So it's like interesting in a way. And I'm not talking about the ones that just straight up like clone it and throw some, you know, different art in there or whatever. It's more like they're heavily inspired by the mechanics of Slay the Spire, but do it a little bit differently, so that it's not just like a gross clone. And so there's some good options out there, but
the reviews of this game are kind of funny. It's like either 5 stars, people are like, oh, I found this searching for Slay the Spire and it's pretty good. Like, it's not the same, but I still like it. And then people are like, 1 star, very clear, Slay the Spire ripoff.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on how you feel about those things. But again, it's also like, hurry up and give the people what they want and get the mobile version done already. Yeah. So unfortunately, it's not coming before the end of the year, which there's only a couple of weeks left of the year. But hopefully it'll be out early next year. You know, people are very excited for Slay the Spire on mobile. I have resisted playing it on Switch. But my friends list is lit up with people that play it all the time. So
my only complaint about this game is that it's a lot like FTL in that, like, when you know, like, so it's all random, right? And in order to like beat the actual boss, like you need to have certain like items and shit like that at like certain points in the game, and you kind of like start to get a feel of like, oh shit, well, I don't have enough health, like I might as well start over, because like there's no way that I'm gonna, like, because you can like tell when you're like behind the curve, or like, you know what, like that you're just going to be behind the curve for stuff. And then it's like, so once you kind of like master like the deck building and everything else in the game, there isn't a ton left to do beyond just like playing like increasingly difficult kind of game modes, which like for me is always kind of like, I don't know, I beat this and it's cool, but at the same time, like, really, really fun until you hit that point, you know, I guess.
Right.
So whatever.
Good interesting game. Well, I will definitely check it out when it comes to mobile.
Yeah.
So we touched on this. What order are you in? You're screwing me all
Angry,
up here.
Angry Birds celebrates 10th anniversary.
We touched on this a little bit earlier. So yeah, December 11th was that when this was? Yeah, December 11th was the proper actual 10-year anniversary of Angry Birds. Which is pretty crazy to think about, actually.
Yeah, that's wild. I remember when this game came out, and I was like, what's this shitty physics game from Click Gamer?
Yeah, what's this Crush the Castle clone?
Yeah.
Yeah, remember how mad people would get when we were like, oh, it's a game like Angry Birds, and they'd be like, you mean it's a game like Crush the Castle? That one was best. And it's like, nobody knows what that is. Everybody knows what Angry Birds is. But anyway, so December 11th was the actual proper birthday of Angry Birds releasing for the first time. And Rovio put together a pretty cool little look back video that's only a few minutes long, but it's got a lot of like clips of all the various games, all the various little cartoons or animation shorts they've done, and just kind of like evolution of all the Angry Birds madness that has happened over the last 10 years. And it's pretty wild to think about what a cultural phenomenon this did become, because there's not really anyone out there that doesn't know what Angry Birds is, whether they played it or not. Like, you know what it is, especially with like their movies. They're actually surprisingly good movies. And
I was really I haven't seen the second one yet, but the first one I just turned on because I was like, well, this is going to be dumb as fuck. So like, let's see how this plays out. And I was like, wow, this is actually way better.
I hear the second one is good, too. So but yeah, it's pretty crazy to see what this has become. And man, I mentioned this in the article, but there was definitely a point there where you got like like Angry Birds fatigue, mm-hmm. where you were just sort of sick of hearing about it, and you were like, oh, Rovio released another new game with Angry Birds in it. Like, God, I'm so sick of it.
It also like fell hand in hand with like a just like global merchandising blitz.
Yeah, that didn't help either. That anytime you went to Target or Walmart or anything like that, it was like Angry Bird shit just strewn.
Yeah, it was like for a while there, it was like you couldn't buy a product without it being an Angry Birds thing. Like whether it was like Angry Birds Capri Sun or Angry Birds like underwear, yeah. like they had everything.
Yeah, it's really wild, but it's also speaks a lot to how big this became. Which mm-hmm. I mean, this was a original mobile game that yeah. became that big, and I think in a lot of ways. This still is mobiles like Mario or Sonic or whatever, because they achieved similar levels of popularity to becoming like a household name sort of thing, where if you mentioned Mario, people knew you were talking about Nintendo, or Sonic the Hedgehog. Right, right. You knew what that was, you know? And I think the same thing can be said for Angry Birds, more so than any other mobile game that has ever come out, even the ones that got real popular. I don't think anything's really achieved the level that Angry Birds has, which is pretty amazing. So yeah, and the crazy blitz of new game releases and merchandising and all that stuff did totally slow down, which I think helped because it got to be too much for a while. And nowadays, I think they've refocused more on like Angry Birds 2 is their flagship game. They update all the time, and I think it's the most popular.
Oh yeah, you can play that game for eternity. There's so much content. Yeah. It's like Candy Crush.
And I think I talked about this before, but so Angry Birds released on the PSP as a PSP Mini, and it's so funny because I play with my PSP and I have it, and but I had never played the Angry Birds version when it came out in 2010 or whatever it was, and it's so funny to go back and play that one now because it's so pure. There's like no weird ads. There's no weird like a billion
no power ups or anything
like that. It's like the pure version of Angry Birds as it was like 10 years ago. And you're like, God, this is like super refreshing and fun. I can just like beat the levels.
I'm actually surprised that like with this, they didn't like re-release like Angry Birds Classic. That was that with no bullshit and like $10 or something like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they totally could have done that or just release it for free for fun or something nostalgia hit for people just to, you know, give them that. But, so yeah, kind of a pretty big milestone for, probably the biggest franchise on mobile, 10 years old this month, which is pretty crazy. And then we've talked about they did the scooter thing last month with their Rage Rider scooters or whatever. Related to that, at the end of last month, they did a something they called a venting machine. And what it was is they worked with some company that I guess can make something like this. It's basically a vending machine that is designed for you to kick and punch and shake and yell at and get mad at. And, you know, I feel like that's like a meme at this point, like somebody like getting mad at a vending machine because their candy won't fall or whatever. And then it fell on you or whatever.
Yeah. Like your favorite YouTuber, Angry Joe.
Yeah. And so this was actually designed to do that and not fall on you and not break. And it'll actually spit out Angry Birds prizes at you. Unfortunately, there's just one, and it was just a limited thing they did in Times Square, New York, hosted by WWE's The Big Show, who is like as big as a vending machine. And it was kind of funny because people could walk up and take their turn at kicking and punching and yelling at this thing or whatever. So there's a couple videos in this story, too, showing the venting machine if you're interested in that. They definitely got creative trying to think of ways to turn your anger into something positive. I feel like both the scooter and the venting machine are like bad examples to set for people because it's like, hey, go drive this motorized vehicle while you're mad and yelling and stuff like that doesn't seem like a good idea. And then like, hey, get mad at this vending machine that's made to get mad at, but what if you get mad at one that's not made to be mad at? And yeah, what if something bad happens? I feel like you're just teaching people bad habits.
Just enjoy it?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you'll become a serial vending machine attacker or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well,
which cool. sucks. I know they it comes from a place of positivity, but I don't know if it totally hit the mark. But happy birthday, Angry Birds. It's a big milestone for you guys. So Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, which was a weird Final Fantasy spinoff game that released on the GameCube way back when.
This game was amazing.
Did you play this back in the day?
I only ever think I played it once because it required like everyone to have a Game Boy Advance and the link cable.
Yeah, it linked
and, like,
up with all the Game Boy Advance cables. Yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing. It is getting the remastering treatment from Square Enix, and it was going to launch on like every platform, including mobile. But they've actually delayed it until next summer. It was originally supposed to launch in January. So that's kind of a bummer if you were looking forward to that. But as we always say, a delayed game is better than a rushed and shitty game. And so, you know, waiting an extra 6 months or so hopefully isn't going to be the end of the world. But yeah, the remaster, they did release a new trailer of it to kind of compensate for the delay. And it looks pretty crazy. I never played this game originally and am not much of a Final Fantasy person, but this seems like one that I might enjoy. So yeah. I would definitely check it out when it comes out.
I mean, it was really good when it first came out. Like really, really cool. Like very kind of basic with like a lot of the gameplay built around like the gimmick of like things that you do with four people.
Yeah, right.
But it was still really neat. I mean, like first time I ever did that, I was like, wow, this is really fucking cool.
So Bethesda announced this week that they are going to be updating Doom and Doom 2 on all the various platforms that they re-released it on back in, I think, October. It was kind of funny because, so Doom, the original Doom, right? Like John Carmack was pretty famous for porting it to the iPhone in like 2009 or whatever, and, making a super playable, awesome version of it with really good controls and, really good performance and all that good stuff because John Carmack's the man.
Yeah.
And obviously Doom's not a super hard game to emulate or anything either. But anyway, the Doom port on iPhone was reasonably popular, and for a long time people really wanted Doom 2, and it was rumored that it was going to come out, but it never did. Along the way, the original Doom got outdated, stopped receiving updates, and I don't even know if it had worked on the latest versions of iOS or anything like that. But Bethesda decided for Doom's 25th anniversary that they were going to re-release these games on mobile and on Switch and on consoles and all that good stuff. And so the original Doom, if you owned the iPhone version back in the day, this came as a free update to that, which is cool.
That's awesome.
But it's not as good of a version as the original John Carmack one was. So it's kind of like a weird trade-off because you're like, okay, well, I'm getting a working version of this game. I'm getting like, you know, some cool new features and stuff like that, but you're also taking away the better controls that the other version had. You're taking away a lot of the control options that I relied on. And so it's kind of like a catch 22 sort of thing where you're like, thanks, except we liked the other one better. So anyway, they've done some updates to them since. I don't know if they're still quite at the level that people enjoyed of the original John Carmack version or not, but they are going to be releasing more updates for these ports. And the ones that are on deck next are going to bring an option for 60 frame per second mode, which I think that should be pretty cool to play. And they're going to be bringing the add-ons that make up Final Doom, as well as the add-on that John Romero released just last year that he made on his own called Sigil. That episode is going to be released
for
free.
That's cool. I've never played those. That's exciting.
Yeah, I've played Final Doom, but not the Sigil I really wanted to play, but I'm just not really equipped to, you know, be adding WADs to my desktop or my laptop or anything like that. So, like, an official easy way to play that is something I've wanted. And it seems like they're going to be released for free, too, free episodes. So
that's cool. That's awesome.
And some other cool options and features and things like that. It was not clear. Bethesda's like blog post or whatever mentioned all platforms, but did not specifically point out iOS and Android. And it's kind of one of those situations where you're like, are we going to get left in the dust like so many other times where all this cool stuff comes to like console and PC, but not the mobile versions?
I mean, it would seem insane to me that like if they were going to redo these games, that they wouldn't redo them in Unity and just have them available.
They
for
are. I believe
everything.
They are.
Unity. Oh, well, yeah. Then it's totally going to be on mobile.
Yeah, well, the PR company for them did reach out and said, confirmed, they are coming to the mobile versions. And so I don't know. We figured that why wouldn't they? But they wanted to make sure that we knew for sure that they are coming to the mobile versions. But yeah, I think that was part of the reasons that they reported these in Unity, was that you can just deploy it across everything pretty easily or whatever. I think for my money, I'm probably going to end up picking up the Switch versions at some point. Doom and Doom 2 are just $5 a piece anyway. And then Doom 3 is on there too, which is $10. And even though that's not like the greatest game in the world, it's still a game that I have good memories of playing on my Xbox back in the day. And so I don't know, but
that's the flashlight one, right?
That's the flashlight one.
That game fucking sucks.
I don't know. Yeah, but for $10 for nostalgia, I mean, I bought Turok. So
oh yeah, I mean, sure. If you have those kind of brain worms, I mean, I'm not going to be the one to.
Actually, Turok's pretty damn fun still, but so yeah. I'll probably end up buying the Switch versions, but I mean, I already have the iPhone versions and I think they still play fine. Even these versions, I do think the Carmack versions were better, but it's not a big deal to me. So
yeah, hey, whatever.
Anyway, look out for these updates for Doom and Doom 2 coming soon. I wouldn't be surprised if they released Doom 3 on mobile too someday, but we'll see.
Cool. Well, keep your eyes peeled for that.
So this was, this was supposed to be a 1-2 Square Enix news punch.
I fucked it up.
Screwed up order, Eli. So Square Enix surprise launched The Last Remnant Remastered on mobile this week, which is kind of weird because it's a Xbox 360 game. And apparently it was exclusive to Xbox 360 back when it released. I don't really remember this game. The name kind of sounds familiar, but yeah, it's not something to play.
Not ringing a bell for me, but at the same time, there was like this weird time period where like Square Enix just like rapid firing out like these weird like one-off RPGs, like I don't know, like remember like Parasite Eve and those other like series you're like, what are these? Just make more Final Fantasy games.
Well, I think the people that have played this, the consensus seems to be it's not like amazing, but it's okay. But people seem to prefer The Lost Odyssey more and wish that that was ported instead, which that's fair. But it's also just kind of impressive, though, to see a game. I mean, we know how powerful iPhones and iPads are nowadays and stuff like that. And we've seen some crazy graphics on stuff that rivals console things or whatever. But it still feels kind of crazy to see a full Xbox 360 release.
I know, that feels really recent, even though I guess it's not at all.
It's not. I mean, I think this game released, I don't know, I don't remember the year it released in, but it's pretty old if it's Xbox 360, right? Like, more than 5 years. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy to see a game of this caliber, a game that was designed as a $60 console game, to release on mobile for $20 and just be that full, crazy, big game experience. Because you play something like Elder Scrolls Blades or something like that, which is like a design for mobile game.
Speaking of which, did you guys cover that Elder Scrolls Blades got like the PvP thing and they removed the chest timers?
I saw that, but I was so out of the Elder Scrolls Blades game. I stopped playing it a while back.
I stopped playing it because of the chest timers. Like, I wonder if it's like actually fun.
I downloaded it to check out that update and try to suss out what was going on, but never got around to it. But yeah, they updated to remove the timers, which I feel like was a big thing that annoyed people. But other people had said that they really messed with the difficulty balance and stuff like that too to maybe compensate. And so I don't know. I mean, it's still a free to play game. I kind of liked it for the first like couple of days I played it.
Oh yeah,
I'm sick of it.
Yeah, the first time user experience is really good.
Right. But no, I do want to check out. They also added a bunch of like winter themed stuff and events and things like that too. So I re-downloaded it and intend to go back to it whenever time permits, which being the part of the year that it is, I don't know when that'll be. but yeah. But you know, you look at a game like that too, which is like made for mobile and has really pretty graphics and stuff like that too, but it still feels like a mobile game. Compared to something like this, which feels like a console game. There's just a different feel between the two things, I think. So, if you're interested in something like that, $20 for a full-blown Square Enix recent-gen RPG, it's a whopping 8.5 gigs. So, make sure you have the space. But I think it's cool that they're releasing this stuff. They must do well enough for them to keep doing it, to keep releasing, you know, quote unquote expensive games on mobile like that. So
yeah, for real. That's cool though. I'm glad that there seems to be a market for that, for whatever that's worth. So
yeah, totally. So this was one of my favorite things that happened this week. The classic Quest Lord got updated for the first time in 6 years, making it once again playable on modern devices and modern versions of iOS. This was one of the hardest pills to swallow during the 32-bit apocalypse, mm-hmm. because this was a 32-bit cool game, and it died off when Apple updated the iPhone software to require 64-bit compatibility. And unfortunately, because it's the product of just one guy who has a full-time life outside of game development, he never really had the time to go back and give it the compatibility update that it needed. So Quest Lord, which released in 2013, was kind of a big hit around the TouchArcade community. And I think all of us at TouchArcade really enjoyed this game too. It's really
it's cool.
Like the most approachable, like, first-person dungeon crawler RPG around. Because there's the Quest, which has been around for many years and has a bajillion expansion packs, and even the base game itself is like hundreds of hours of stuff. But it's a really complex kind of game, and you really have to be kind of into that type of, like, kind of hardcore pen and paper sort of style game.
Yeah.
To really enjoy that one. And this one I felt like was way more pick up and play and easier to follow, easier to not go and get lost or do something wrong and screw up your save game or anything like that. Like, it's pretty linear, but it also has a big world to explore and stuff like that. And, you know, just fun missions, fun characters and stuff like that. It had a lot of really just good personality, I guess you could say. But it was definitely like, if somebody was like, you know, I like first-person dungeon crawlers, but I think they're too difficult to get into, I'd be like, go play Quest Lord. Mm-hmm. That's your stepping stone into this world. And then you'll know if you're ready to take on something a little bit crazier. So it was kind of sad when this game disappeared for a variety of reasons. But as we've talked about many times, even since not long after this game originally released, a sequel has been in the works by Eric Kincaid, the game's developer. And just about a year ago, it was announced that the game would launch December 2018. And then the day it was set to launch, he put out kind of an emergency message across social media and stuff like that, that no, it's not launching. He found
a critical bug. Oh, yeah, I remember this. Yeah.
And he has to delay the release, and it'll probably come in January. And then January turned into February, and then February turned into maybe it'll come in spring. And then spring gave way to... there were no further updates on when it might come out. And then for the rest of 2019, it was kind of silence. Like, you would see him occasionally mention something on Twitter if somebody asked, saying like, yeah, it's, you know, still happening or whatever, but no real concrete kind of progress update on Quest Lord 2, or what was happening to it or what happened to it. I mean, this is a game that was literally had a release date. I don't remember if it was up for pre-order or not, but it was like ready to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very last second, he had to pull it from the release or whatever. So anyway, as it turns out, what he's been spending the last year doing is rewriting the original Quest Lord from the ground up, which is actually useful for Quest Lord 2 as well, and has to do with the bug that he encountered that was kind of a show-stopping bug that caused him to pull the release in the first place.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so it's taken an extra year, but the benefit of this is that he had always intended to go back and update the original Quest Lord after the sequel came out. Now it's just kind of doing things in reverse order, which isn't the worst thing in the world, too, because now you have time to play through this updated original game.
Hell yeah, that's great.
In anticipation for the sequel. It's almost a better way to do things. And then in regards to the sequel, there's an FAQ inside of the updated version of Quest Lord that addresses this, and he actually says he expected it to be done December 22nd, which is like a week from now. Is that right? But unfortunately, something came up real life-wise, and it's actually not going to launch this month after all. And I don't think he's in a point where he wants to throw any more dates out there. But I think that you can get the... I think it's realistic to expect that it's really, really, really close. And I wouldn't be surprised if it launches in January, but I don't want to peg that down in case anything else happens or whatever. But it sounds like this last year he spent rebuilding the first game has also gone into working on the second game. And originally he had planned on having them both be available around the same time, but that's just not working out or whatever, for whatever reason. So it's not bad though. If you never played the original Questlord, go buy it and play it now. It's a fantastic game. It's super fun. And then when the second one comes out, you'll be ready to go with that one. And if you did play Questlord and owned it back in the day, go update it, because it works now. And it's still super fun. I'm playing through it again right now, and I'm just remembering how much I like this game.
Well, you know, another game that got a surprise update this week that you might have not have seen is Pocket Trains. Got a huge update.
Oh, no shit. Yeah, I did not
like
see that.
All sorts of new shit, like new trains, new cities, new...
That's cool. I've noticed that those guys do that sometimes. They've updated a few of their older games kind of out of nowhere, I think for the love of their own library of games.
Yeah.
But Pocket Trains was still like surprisingly popular from comments that I've seen around, you know, around the place.
Yeah,
the
people always really seem to like it. Both that and Pocket. I think Pocket Planes also has been semi-recently updated, unless I'm imagining.
I'll have to look into that a little bit more. I know that people on the forum still post in like the Pocket Trains thread sometimes. They're like, oh, I need help with so-and-so. And it's like, damn, people still playing that, huh?
Yeah.
But anyway, Questlord, I love this game to pieces. I really can't wait for the sequel to come out. Hopefully that's not too far off. But in the meantime, go replay or play for the first time the original game, because it's awesome.
really good.
Yeah. And speaking of old games getting updated, this little outfit called Game Club updated Spider, The Secret of Bryce Manor, which was our 2009 Game of the Year.
Hell yeah.
And it kind of blew my mind to look back. We posted the Game of the Year thing on Christmas 2009.
We get such massive traffic from like people.
Yeah.
That was the iPod Touch days.
Yeah.
So that the idea was that like you would open your iPod Touch on Christmas morning and then like want to go and see what to download.
I still think that's kind of true today, but it just kind of blew my mind that like, oh my God, that was 10 years ago almost.
Oh yeah.
It just seems kind of crazy that amount of time has passed. But yeah, Spider, Secret of Bryce Manor. Not just updated, but remastered in a way, because you guys went through and redrew the graphics, which is pretty
crazy.
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy. Like the so they actually did an HD update. I think when the iPad came out or when the iPhone 5 came out, I don't know. At some point, they went in and like made it like Retina. But what's interesting is that like those very first generation like Retina games like are not like modern HD that you would expect. You know, so like,
yeah,
it's still. Like, the before and after on this one, like, isn't as dramatic as, like, Hi, How Are You, for instance, which was like, oh, shit, that is insane night and day. But it's, like, it just, like, the important thing to us releasing this was that Spider is such a cool game that, like, I want it to look as good as you remember it looking.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, with the slightly bigger pixels of, like, the old-style HD, like, it was still a super fun game. Everything was great, but it was just, like... You know, I just didn't want it to feel old when, like, this game still is, like, really, really cool. And the mechanics are really neat and everything about
such
it is cool.
Game.
So,
well, it's funny, too, because, like, remember the iPhone 4 was the first Retina display. Mm-hmm. And it seemed so crazy at that time. Like, you'd look at your iPhone 3 or 3GS or whatever you had, and you'd look at that and you look at the icons and you're like, it looks fine. But then you look at the iPhone 4 and you'd be like, oh my God, it's so sharp. It's so crisp. It's like mind blowing. Like, I don't understand. You don't even need something this high resolution, whatever. Well, fast forward, you know, the next 9 years or whatever, and the resolutions of devices now are like so beyond anything you would need that it's just like kind of bananas to even think about. And so you think about like the pre-iPhone 4 games. There was a big to-do about, like, are they going to be updated for the Retina display or not? And so that was, like, a big thing for a long time. It's like, oh, so-and-so game updated for the Retina display. They went back and, you know, it was double the resolution of the original iPhone.
Yeah.
So you'd go back and double your art assets and it would look fine. And if you didn't, it looked like ass. And so it's funny to look back at that now. And like you're saying, you're like, even the Retina HD, quote-unquote, assets for this game – on devices nowadays, they look like as shitty as the original iPhones did.
Oh, yeah.
On
it's crazy.
Display.
It's
so,
crazy.
yeah, it's we're at a point now where the resolution displays is so beyond what I think anybody imagined back then that it would ever be. So
yeah, and we're planning on releasing the second Spider I think the week after the week of Christmas. I don't know, is the iTunes or the App Store freeze is
I don't think they've even announced yet, but
well, it usually happens soon, so
but I actually think that nowadays it's frozen in a sense, but you can still like release updates and stuff like that.
Yeah, you can release games if you schedule them. You just can't like if we don't get it submitted and approved before then, like it won't come out until after the freeze. So fingers crossed on all that.
Yeah, there's a you put together a pretty cool before and after look at the new redrawn graphics or whatever.
It's kind of hard to get like a really good kind of like, because the differences are so minor, but like when you are playing, like it kind of makes a big,
you can tell, and you can look at like it reminds me a lot of like back in the day when anti-aliasing was like a new thing, and you were like, this game does not have an anti-aliasing, and then you turn it on and it's like, oh, smoother edges or whatever.
It's definitely, I really think like Spider, if it came out now, like would still stand up to be like really good game of 2019 even.
Oh, totally. It still is super fun. I started playing through this again too, and it's just like creating webs and stuff like that is so cool. And then the sense that you get of being like this little tiny insect inside this huge house. Mm-hmm. They did such a good job with that, and the music kicks ass, which I totally forgot about. But it's just like so fun to kind of create the webs, and there's sort of like a puzzle aspect to it when you're trying to, you know, capture all the bugs and stuff and move on to the next area. It's just a really good game with a really surprisingly strong and interesting narrative. If there's people that haven't played this before, they should definitely take advantage of the revitalized Game Club version. And I have no doubt that like people back in the day, you know, I feel like, for better or worse, like Apple Arcade has legitimized mobile gaming in a certain sense, to where people before that were just like dumb baby games, free to play crap, blah, 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 are like, oh, wow, there's actually some cool things on mobile. Like, wow, I never knew that. Like, if you showed them this game, they'd be like, holy crap. But although these are on Steam, I think, too, right? So
I believe so.
There are people out there that have played it on desktop and been like, damn, that's cool. But, yeah, I agree with you that this game could be released now and hold up super well and be kind of like one of those little indie darlings or whatever. So
one thing that I didn't remember, did the game always rotate into portrait mode?
I was going to ask you the same thing. I don't think so.
Because I was this is one of those things where like, I don't know if we did that or if it was always like that, but it's actually weirdly cool playing it in portrait mode.
Yeah, that was the first thing I noticed, was like, holy crap, this auto rotates. And I do not believe that was a feature of the original game. So that must be something your Game Club wizards did. But it plays really well in portrait, actually.
Like, I'm surprised that it wasn't in portrait all along. It plays so well in portrait.
Well, if it did do that before, I had never realized that feature existed, because I only ever played it in landscape.
I feel like you have to notice, right? I don't know.
I would think so. I think it's got to be new, but, you know, time is such a funny thing, and my memory just sucks anyway, so.
I feel like I should probably know these things.
but like all the other Game Club releases, if you own this previously, you can download this new update for it, even if you're not a Game Club subscriber, even though you should be a Game Club subscriber, because it's a nice way to say thank you for all the work that you put into bringing all these games back. But this one's a little bit tricky, too, because there was an iPad version.
So I believe we pushed an update out to the iPad version. So if you have it, you should be able to get the update in your purchase history.
Yes, that's what it shows in the iTunes preview or whatever for the iPad version. It does have an update for it. And so if you owned the iPad-only version previously, you can get this updated working version now. But I think the way it's going to work is that if any future updates come to this, or any extra content for some reason or something like that, the previously iPhone only version is now a universal build, and that's going to be the one that's like maintained going forward.
Yeah.
But if you had the iPad only version, you can still grab the free update now, and it's going to be working again. So that's cool.
This game is so good. It's dumb. Like, if you haven't played it, you should definitely.
Yeah. And the sequel. I feel so bad that the sequel is kind of what sunk this studio, because it's such a good game also. and maybe even better than the original. I don't know. I kind of like them both, but
there was a lot of like cool things they did in the sequel that like I don't know, like the problem I think was like they were almost like too subtle. Because they had designed it in a way that you were only supposed to like you need to have like certain things only happen on like certain cycles of the moon and stuff, with the idea being that like you played over the course of a month. I just don't know if people did that.
I don't think people really did. I remember a lot of people like adjusting their internal clock to like see the different things. I think that they're maybe too ambitious with stuff like that, although a lot of cool ideas were in play. But even if you didn't take into account any of those weird things like that, like it's just a solid game anyway. And a good follow-up to the original. So excited to replay that one too. I think if I have time, I'm going to try and beat Bryce Manor here before that one comes out. But
beat it. Well, I mean, if you just play through it really quick, it's not a long game, but if you want to like actually like find all the secrets and stuff, that's what's time consuming.
Don't spoil the secret of Bryce Manor. People haven't played it. But yeah, so awesome game. Happy to see it brought back. Game Club is doing God's work. I say that every week, but it's true. So anyway, I think that's all about all I've got to talk about today.
Let's see anything else going on.
So do you remember, you know, Speedy PH?
Yeah, he just messaged me on Discord.
No, did he? Yeah. You got a Switch.
Oh, cool.
That's what he messaged me for. It's probably what he sent you to. Speedy PH is one of our more enthusiastic,
super old school touch arcade guys.
Yeah, very old school, but a huge supporter. I just love the guy. His enthusiasm, you can tell in all his emoji laden content or comments. But anyway, he got a Switch, so now he can start taking advantage of the Switch Arcade, is what he told me.
Switch owns.
So shout out Speedy PH. What up? Welcome to the Switch. And yeah, with that, thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode.
Are you going to see Star Wars next week? Do you care about Star Wars?
I care. I'll see it. I might wait. I don't know if I'll see it in the theater.
Not an opening night guy?
No, definitely not opening night. But I might make an effort to see it in the theater because of all the big booms and the big screen and all that good stuff. But I could go either way. I don't know. I got a nice, you know, a surround sound system.
We're seeing it first thing on Thursday.
Really?
Next week, because like God, people have been so fucking obnoxious with the Mandalorian spoilers that I was telling Lindsay, I was like, if we don't see this like the first showing of the first day, I don't care about seeing it.
Right, because yeah, well now you can be the spoiler and you can ruin people's lives.
I don't do that, but I don't know what it is about the Mandalorian. It's like the episode goes live at like 2 a.m. and by like 3:10, it's like, all right, fair game for spoilers now.
Yeah.
So frustrating.
No, I don't know. I'll see it eventually. May or may not be in the theater, but definitely not opening night. I did one opening night Star Wars, and that was when I was in high school, and it was the Phantom Menace, I think. And it was pretty nuts. The line was very long. Things were different back then.
Well, but, yeah. I mean, like, most of the nicer theaters around us do reserve seating now.
Yeah.
Which is nice because like you just show up like, I don't know, 5-10 minutes before the movie and just watch it. Right. As opposed to I remember going to those like opening nights when I was in high school too. And it was like, all right, movie starts at 7. Let's get there at 4.
Yeah. Or let's camp out the night before. It's like an iPhone launch or something. But it was always cool because the lines of people were all like super fans. Mm-hmm. And you'd always like, there's a good energy. You know what I mean? Like a lot of excitement, people dressing up and all that stuff. And good vibes.
The last movie I did that with is probably like Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. That was like the end of the waiting in line at movies for me.
Yeah.
That was cool though.
Yeah. Anyway, have fun. We'll spoil the whole movie next week's show, I guess.
I guess so.
And as I was getting to, because I always forget to mention in the beginning, Touch Arcade is primarily supported through our readers and listeners and viewers. So if you like what we do and want to see us continue to do it, please check out patreon.com/touch arcade. Consider throwing a little support our way. You'll get an exclusive video version of this podcast with an exclusive pre-show role where we talk about... I don't even remember what we talked about today, but it's exclusive.
Slipper show and tell.
Oh, slipper show and tell was in today's episode.
So if you want to know what the cool
if you're just listening to the audio version, you are missing out on that amazing content. You can also help us out by doing your Amazon shopping through TouchArcade.com/Amazon. Also, you can help us out just by telling people that Touch Arcade exists. And when they ask you if there's any cool mobile games, you point them our way, because that's what we do.
Hell yeah.
So with that, thanks again so much for listening. And we will join you again next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show.
I'll throw this podcast into the fires of Mount Doom.